Welcome to the AAA NFT podcast, all about affordable NFTs, bringing you from 0 to 60 in the non-fungible token world without breaking the bank, with your hosts Andrew, aka Rantum, and George from Mostly Stable on Zedrun, who will help you navigate new projects, interview expert guests, and explore NFT trends. So whether you're on your first or 50th NFT, we're going to have something for you. And as a quick note, we are not, I repeat, not financial advisors, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Alrighty, disclaimer over, let's get to it. Today on All About Affordable NFTs, we are talking about the theme of phishing, that's with a PH, phishing for NFTs, and the new hack that had a lot of OpenSea members very, very concerned until they figured out what was going on. But we'll get to that later. Looking at a current snapshot of the NFT market overall for, call it, the past 7 days-ish, NFTs are down about 15%. But frankly, it depends on where you throw a dart, because we've had some huge explosions, as we talked last time, on Invisible Friends, which was just absurdly high, and still some projects able to do high volume in this. But the overall market trajectory is down, but it could be because there's just money moving to different side platforms that are just not in the purview of the Ethereum, Polygon, main tracked worlds. Andrew, what do you
say? Yeah, well, that is interesting to me, where the money is moving. And, I think one thing that I've noticed is that it's almost always just one or two projects dominating the volume. It's like everybody that is trading goes to the hot project, and the other projects are just, not moving much, and it's interesting to think how this will play out. If there's just new projects minting all the time, those get a majority. There's one or two that end up floating to the top, getting a majority of the volume for a week or two, and then everybody just rotates on to the next one. How does this, it's going to be tough for this to work out if some of these older projects can't maintain and sustain value, especially if we don't get a lot more people coming in. And I don't think that that's really the way you should always be looking at it. We've got to find ways for these older projects, for these projects not to just kind of be, I don't want to say that they are pump and dump, but it's people looking at these relatively short term when you see values going up so crazy fast. It felt like Bored Apes went up fast, but if you look at the history of it, it's nothing compared to what some of these projects are doing. And there's no way that they're going to hold that kind of trajectory. And when they don't, people are going to start taking profits and move on to the next one. And I don't know, it can't be done forever. Unfortunately, we have seen a lot of scams out there. So it is almost like the ones that aren't scams are getting all of the attention and the value is going crazy until somebody finds the next one. And we'll see how long this continues.
Yeah, if there's a fixed amount of buyers and large buyers out there, it's just sort of playing like follow the money, like the newest thing that has the most marketing and most energy, like suddenly just absorbs instantly the liquidity in the market. You see all this money just suddenly run over here and run over there. And unless the overall size of the market gets larger in terms of the demand side, right? People, wallets, money. There is a concern that like if each one of these projects is like, well, I got my bags, off I go, one out of 10 times, that could be enough. Could be enough.
Yeah, that can't go forever, although. I would just think people would get tired of it, though. You don't need a lot of people to win in those projects to sustain, I would say.
Yeah, that's true. All right. First up on the news, what do you have?
Yeah, so we've got a couple, maybe not most exciting things, but we've got Schwab, Charles Schwab, the company, has filed with the SEC to create a crypto economy ETF. So they aren't going to actually hold the assets directly themselves. They're going to invest in companies that hold tokens, keeping themselves at an arm's distance, I suppose, from the assets. But, it is they hold a lot of money. So just opening that crack a little bit is allows some to come in, and I'm sure that it won't be the end if it does go well.
Did Schwab just create a DAO where, I hope they get a Schwabie. if I get a little Schwabi and then they give out tokens and then I get access to all the things that they hold, like a Pixelmon or something.
Like a Pixelmon. Uh-oh.
A Kevin backed currency. That's what I'm looking for. It's big, it's a lot of money, and it's showing you when financial players like that are getting into it, the pressure is real. Sure, it's a fad, but it also means that someone is saying, hey, how do I invest money here? And guess what? We want a VIG, right? We want a taste.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we didn't actually have this on the news here, but I did notice that Kenneth Griffin from Citadel, very big private equity group, or it could be hedge fund, I'm not exactly sure, but I know that he controls a lot of money. He is getting into crypto. He said that he's made a big mistake in previously kind of vilifying crypto. And that's interesting because he was on the other side of a lot of those GameStop short seller, or he was short selling when a lot of people were trying to buy up the price of that. So he's coming into crypto. And, you know, as we know, he's not afraid to play games with changing the price of an asset. So, you know, look out, I would say, in some ways, but also it is more people coming in with a lot of money.
Yeah. And if you were involved at all, watch the Constitution DAO, if I'm not mistaken. He is the player in that, I think, that also, you know, stole the Constitution right out from the DAO. It says a lot to say, oh my gosh, I kind of missed what was going on here. And I think more and more people are waking up to that. We have NFT marketplace OpenSea blocks users in Iran due to U.S. sanctions. What now?
Yeah, this is interesting. We sort of alluded to actions like this in our last episode when we talked about how some centralized marketplaces are restricting access to certain users. And this just came out before we recorded the show here, that there are certain Iranian users. And I think there's a couple other countries that are being blocked. And it was first mentioned by, I believe it was by someone that wasn't even in Iran at the time. It was someone that had been in Iran. So they had an IP address that, you know, was tracked there and they were being blocked. I've heard that it's not just OpenSea, it's also Infura, which is sort of like an API that runs behind a lot of Web3 technologies. So they're blocking it, they power a lot of MetaMask's capabilities. So Iranian users, for the most part, are blocked from both OpenSea and MetaMask. And it was, you know, without warning. So, you know, it's interesting to see how these, you know, we've got these decentralized technologies, but if everybody's using a few centralized and technologies to access them, there's still kind of choke points here that can be, you know, can be controlled and cut off.
Yeah. And you also have to take into account that many of these secondary marketplaces actually just use the OpenSea API sometimes to like pipe in the prices and listings. And frankly, if you are cut, if your IPs are, you know, sanctions have been, you know, mentioned saying like OpenSea has it in their terms of service. Like if you're getting sanctioned, we're in a territory like, no, you can't use our services, which makes complete sense. But the second order effect is that all of the APIs, all of the tech that runs through OpenSea there too, also gets blocked or prohibited from that. So while it's important to note that when you buy an NFT, an ERC-20 back token, you own it, you have it, it's in your wallet. However, your ability then to use it is very much limited by what platforms allow that to happen. And there's an inevitable, like anytime someone says it's completely decentralized, like decentralized maxis, like a maximalist who talks about like, oh, crypto is perfectly decentralized. Like the natural fact is that the web originally was decentralized. Everyone could spin up their own website until you realize that Google then became the pendulum swings. Google then frankly became the front door to the web where they're saying like, all right, if you don't index, people don't find you. You still exist, but if Google blocks you, you're kind of done.
Right. There's always the argument that you can go use another service and that's why, you know, it gives consumers or whoever choice. And, you know, the truth is that, you know, there's almost nobody using LooksRare. There is another marketplace, you know, to go on, but you know, how am I going to get anybody to buy it if nobody ever sees sees it there. And, you know, it doesn't do me much good to have access to my NFT if I can't sell it. I mean, you know, for the most part, that's what it's being used for. But, you know, even if you're trying to just use it to maybe access a Discord or access a website, I mean, those those sites can just as easily cut off access. And, you know, it, I understand why a community would want to do this. And I remember Kevin Rose mentioning this when he was launching his Proof Collective NFT. He had 1,000 of those for sale, and you're getting access to the Discord. And he mentioned specifically that, you know, that they would still restrict access if they found that somebody wasn't, you know, abiding by kind of the rules of the group. And that's interesting, you know, when you can buy that, you know, buy the NFT for that much and then not be able to use it, you know, it, it does change the decentralization part. And then, you know, I'm not saying that there's a problem with it, but there's, it just goes against what a lot of people are also talking about at the same time as being one of the big benefits of this Web3 world, I guess.
Yeah. I definitely agree on that. All right. Should we move to our affordable project? I moved our fishing news on OpenSea for our theme discussion, which we'll definitely get to, but all right.
Yeah, Pegasi. Absolutely.
Pegasi. All right. I have talked
back
about
to
it
Pegasi,
several times.
Yeah. Because, oh man, are we really, we're going for another, we're just going to rename it to the pony podcast here soon.
The pony pot. Like, look, my handle is mostly stable. I have a certain set of skills, Andrew. And these set of skills are pointlessly being obsessed with horse-based NFT games, which I throw myself into with vigor and aplomb. So here we go. Pegasi, pegasi.io. We've talked about it before. It is, you know, a racing, essentially play-to-earn game where you develop your stable. You can breed these mechanical-looking digital NFTs on the Polygon network. And essentially why I'm bringing it up right now is because the in-game currency was previously at like 23 cents. It is now down to 3 cents. So it has ebbed and flowed, but it is at a pretty low point right now. And the price to enter what used to be a $2,000 like zero breed NFT is now hovering around $500. So we're now into the land of affordable, where I feel more responsible in bringing it back up, as well as full disclosure, pumping my own bags because I own like 9 of these as last night. I'm going to probably breed more. But here's the math, and feel free to do the math yourself. I'll try to find a calculator for folks just so you can do it. But if you go on, and my play would be to look at the Clin breed, and they're on sale for $500. So you can get a zero because they have 7 potential breeds, and each breed that you use costs a little bit more in terms of the in-game currency. But you could essentially buy 2 of these, which is 1,000, breed them for like $130 per, and over the course of a week have 4 potentially that you would sell back for your initial money back. And then suddenly you'd have 2 clear, free and clear. Or you could choose to, you know, do what I'm doing, which is build up a stable of these little things that you can race and you can rent out, which is nice because they have a full rent feature going on where there are people all around the world who rent out the things that I put in the marketplace. And that throws off like $8 to $10 a day in a profit share, and it gets released every 2 weeks. So it's kind of interesting. And it's all sort of mathed out. And I have a lot of faith in the development team there that has plans for, and you can look at this at apollo.pegaxi.io, a full dashboard and a plan for how they keep the mint versus burn ratio, which determines in large part the price, in relative control as much as they can, fighting off the problems that Axie Infinity has seen where the price continues to go down because people keep minting and selling out of the ecosystem. So Andrew, one of these days I'm going to get you to buy into this, but it's math, frankly. Like, you'll probably make your money back and or not. I'm talking about digital Pegasi.
just a quick jump in here. I note this at the end of this episode, but in case you don't make it there, I have a note that you should not buy Pegas on OpenSea. I repeat, don't buy them on OpenSea. I'll explain why at the end of the episode. All right.
Yeah, I'll check it out. You know, it's another pony to add to my list. I need to check out. I've only got a handful of pony projects. Unlike you, I don't ship everyone, but this does look cool. I've been saying I'm going to get one. I think I may need to take the plunge here.
Yeah, well, it'll get you onto some interesting platforms, certainly on Polygon, but also KyberSwap is the place where they have staking. So they have like a stake pool that is like around 200% APR, but it fluctuates so wildly, it's hilarious.
I'm glad to see that KyberSwap is still around. I remember their ICO many years ago, and it's good to see that they have stuck around. It's a name that I remember, and there are many that definitely do not exist anymore.
Hey, here's a question for you. What do you like for bridging between Polygon and ETH?
So I usually use the Hop protocol, the Hop bridge. Pretty fast, takes, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes to get to Polygon. That seems to be one of the slower ones whenever you're bridging. I haven't done a lot of, trying to think if I bridge back from Polygon to ETH. I don't know that I've actually gone that way. I know that that's been a problem for at times coming back from Polygon.
Back out, that's not concerning
to Ethereum. but I haven't. I don't know that I've done that, or at least not recently. I haven't run into issues if I have done that. You use Umbria typically,
great.
Is that right?
Yeah, I use Umbria, and I've officially sent money both directions. Although most of the time it goes into Polygon and then gets eaten up by my Zed addiction. So,
Hop works on works for multiple protocols. So I've used it on others, sending some to Arbitrum and I believe to Optimism as well. These are both Ethereum layer twos. So you can use Ethereum ETH there. You can leave it in ETH just on a different layer. So it's the same asset, just on a layer two. You can move it around cheap on any of those. It's very cheap compared to Ethereum.
It's on a Hop protocol. What is the site?
It is Hop Exchange. Hop Exchange. I'm sorry, Hop Debt Exchange.
Cool. Got
all sorts of different domain TLDs.
Yeah, links
now.
In the show notes. Says you know where to find those links. Just go find those show notes. I mean, certainly apologies to anybody who ever makes their way through our show notes, but they're all there. We do this quickly. Anyway, that's my play for you. And it's partially because we're trying to be careful about what we just sort of recommend. I think in the past, you know, we've been lucky and unlucky, but if we're not super excited about something, we're like, or even like marginally interested, we're like, we're not just going to say it for saying purposes. So we're recycling some of the old stuff.
Kind of hurt some of our take on the market right now. It's hard to know, what the next hot one is going to be. You know, we're not trying to, I mean, we'd love to know that and actually have access to it, but we're not going to be able to do that. And we're certainly not going to be able to tell people ahead of time when that's going to happen. So, you know, it's not the one to play. It's not the game that you're going to be able to win unless you are making it a full-time job.
Yeah. And that's like us looking around and, you know, thanks to the folks that are in Discord sharing stuff. We owe some of our audience, we're going to get into Tezos, but it's going to take a little bit. But you know what kind of frustrated me with the Invisible Friends thing is like, I saw it coming. I said it was coming. And we both, it's like watching a new release of like the Tesla model, I can't afford it, come out. And you're like, hey, everybody. Yeah, Tesla
right.
model.
I think that's going to be a hot car. Like, yeah. Yeah. You actually mentioned it was kind of like when I thought that the Clone X project might be good.
You were absolutely correct.
You know how I heard about this one? It was a billboard in Times Square. So their marketing worked. It wasn't exactly like I dug that one up. And believe it or not, I wasn't able to mint it. And it's gone on to, I don't know, people are selling Bored Apes to go get those now. So,
yeah, I don't know. This is not the show for that. I'm such a game hunter, though. I'm in it for the games this year. I'm going to find the angles. And I think there's ways to play without needing to play. for a lot of these. And I like the rent dynamics inside of PegAxie. I don't need to be in there, but I'm like managing at a different level, playing a different game. And yeah, I
find something so far, to click on, keep entertained without just buying more things.
If you need something to occupy your mouse while you're claiming to work. Yeah. I think that's enough summary of that. Anyway. Fishing for NFTs, OpenSea phishing scam scared the heck out of a lot of people in the industry. OpenSea suddenly was sort of like, it was like all over Twitter, and there was confusion across Discords where people thinking that there was some sort of hack that let people get into their accounts and just start selling their NFTs. And it, you know, we saw some Bored Apes go, and there was a lot of panic before people realized what exactly the hole was, and it was user error, users falling for what are called phishing attacks. Now, obviously not all innocent here, but phishing attacks are essentially somebody emailing you something that looks official, tricks you into giving up your wallet information, and then, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's used a lot in Web 2 as well. You know, we shouldn't say this like it gets a Web 3 specific, like it's just wallet. You know, people use this a lot to gain access to pass, you know, to get your password for bank accounts, for Facebook, for whatever. You know, and it was coincided with OpenSea's upgrade of a contract that was being done to address some issues with the contract, where people were able to buy NFTs for old listing prices. We mentioned this on an old episode, a past episode here, that basically expired, or what should have been expired listings were still active. So maybe a listing from 6 months ago for a Bored Ape, you know, that was at 5 ETH was all of a sudden executed at, you know, while the floor was at 100 ETH or so. So there are a few of those. So they upgraded the OpenSea contract and then warned users ahead of time that they would need to relist all their listings because of this upgrade on the contract. So some people sent out emails pretending to be OpenSea at the time. And, you know, there was reason to believe that it could be real from those users' perspective. You know, it wasn't, you know, I'm not exactly sure how OpenSea could prevent that from happening necessarily. You know, just it was unfortunate that it happened. And, you know, at that time, because it did seem like, OpenSea's made a change to the contract, and rather than making this better, it's made it worse. But, you know, it turned out that that was not at all the case. It was just kind of an old school phishing attack here.
Yeah. It's interesting because you see this whole like scared hype news cycle because we're still so new and things are still being figured out that, like, I don't know, it could be real. And it's like a run of the mill phishing attack that happens pretty commonly across the board. And so it's
that's actually interesting to think, you know, how many things kind of get magnified because
how many people do you think were fished for Citibank accounts this week?
Right.
You know, it's something on their credit card. Like, how many credit cards were swiped, stolen, and done today? Where's the news article on that? I don't know. How many millions of dollars? Far more than this. But it was
right.
Just
I'm sure these were out there. If you can look back at some of the some archives of those newspapers that are still around, if they you know, were talking about this in the late 90s, they were all doom and gloom. A lot of those aren't around anymore. So, you know, take that for what for what it's worth.
Yeah. So I think there's a bit of this hand-wringing and the news cycles looking for narratives because it's new, because it's scary, because it's threatening. And on the other side of it, you're like, wait a minute, you're just talking about somebody made some, like, I think it was like 13 people it came down to had accidentally clicked on this email. And the truth is, you know, you can, that's what,
pretty small percentage, too. Honestly.
Like, that's not
of OpenSea's users.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think one of the lessons is to really be careful with your hot wallets. Like, look, if you put all your eggs in one basket, like the risk of you just making a quick mistake, it'll happen 1 out of 100 times. And unfortunately, that's enough to ruin it. So, you know, we talked about having multiple wallets. That might be a good idea. I always am now on guard anytime I hear like contract update. If I hear the words contract update, I'm like, I'll wait. Thank you. And I'll like triple check what's going on. I'll check the Discord and be like, I'm not signing anything until I really have seen others do it. And I see that I'm in the right place. And then even still, I just go,
you know, like it reminds me of when you had to be kind of more careful of you know, when you actually had software as opposed to just running everything in the cloud, and you had to upgrade and, you know, maybe be wary of how well your system would work afterward. You wait for other people to do it, report if there's going to be any problems. And then once everything's safe for a bit, then you'll upgrade. But, you know, there's no need to be the first one. You're already, I don't know. It is tough at times because the first early jumpers do get rewarded often in crypto. So, you know, people, there are many scammers that are well aware of that and are taking advantage of the fact that people often leap and then look.
Yeah. I mean, ignore everything you get as a cold Discord notice. Like all of them are spam. All of them are ripoffs. If you want to joke, go on to Twitter and just use the hashtag MetaMask. And I did this, and I counted it. I think I got 5 hack attempts in 5 minutes. Just using the hashtag MetaMask. A bunch of people pretending like their customer service support, sending you to fake sites.
Wow. That I'm not surprised. You know, I don't know. It's just going to take more. I mean, unfortunately, I think there's going to be endless scams. It's going to take more savviness on the part of the user for a while here. You know, that we can put more safeties in place. But at this point, you know, there, I mean, things like phishing, you know, that's unfortunate. It is a relatively well-known attack vector, I would say, but, you know, maybe not. Maybe that's me. You know, maybe that's me assuming that people that are getting into Web3 stuff know more about this than they necessarily should have to.
Yeah. So another thing is just purge old contracts. Every now and then I just jump into my MetaMask and be like, what have I connected to? And then I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to disconnect. And if I need to reconnect to it later, like, fine. Because those are just potential like backdoor problems.
Or checking if your wallet is attached or if there's any contracts that are open, go to revoke.cash. You can put your address in there and see if there's anything that you need to revoke there. We'll link that in the notes as well, but a handy little tool.
Unless that is the hack. And that's,
you know, it's a good point. You know, who do you trust?
Yeah, I got them scared now. Yeah, don't do that with your Xcopy wallet. So again, when times to be alert, times to transition, new drops, announcements coming, capturing on FOMO. And unlike the sort of like, sadly, like the real, you know what, we've been desensitized to understanding and looking at contracts, especially online, because every single site has trained us in the like accept cookies or you don't get website, click here to accept this long list of agreements that you're not going to go to. And it's, you know, definitely been desensitizing the web population. And unfortunately, now with Web3, signing a contract means that you are allowing a potential right access to your assets.
Yeah.
Not just read, but right.
It is odd when, you know, when you realize that when you sign into a site and they can, you know, they can see your whole wallet if they want to. And, you know, that's a good reason to keep multiple wallets, you know, when you are signing into various sites for multiple reasons, I'd say, you know, if you are concerned about privacy and, you know, don't think that crypto is making you anonymous. You know, once you sign in with a wallet and they have both an IP and your wallet address, I mean, there's a lot of info there. So just keep that in mind when you are using these things. This stuff is not anonymous at all. In fact, there's a lot more that can be tracked.
Yeah. And there's no sort of change that's going to happen. You're like, oh, why don't they fix this or that? Like, simply because of the law of large numbers and the necessity that like you're going to make money at scale because there's a vulnerability at 0.01%. Someone on the edge is going to make a mistake and it costs me nothing to send my 100,000th email to blast you with a potential hook or spam or thing on Twitter or Discord. So it's sort of inevitable. That's just what it is. Why do you rob banks? That's where the money is. And why do I send, you know, as a spammer, 100 million messages out? Because it only takes one for me to get a payday.
Yep. It still works. The math still works.
Yeah. And so like the biggest, you know, the biggest security is level starts at, you know, the one that exists between your ears. And, you know, you do our best working out from there. But there was a moment of panic. And it's just, I was definitely being like, oh God. Because they were like, maybe it's a XY, 2Y problem. I was like, oh God, I was on there too. Maybe it's Elixir. I was like, oh God, I was on there too. It's like they're going through the list of all the things it could be. I was like, me. So I was a bit relieved to realize it was just, you know, just web two.
Yeah. I mean, it is sort of nice to know, oh, user error. I mean, you know, it's nice at least. I mean, I think it makes everybody feel a little bit better. Like you can avoid that. And, you know, that one actually is relatively easy to avoid. There are others that, you know, I don't know that it's as easy. You know, I actually wanted to mention that there was another hack recently on just quickly on the Treasure marketplace that I've mentioned a couple times. That's on Arbitrum. There was apparently something in the marketplace that allowed listings to go for a zero bid. So someone figured this out. Stole about 40 of these. It was worth about 1.4 million worth. So maybe it was even more than 40. That doesn't sound quite right. But so then the contract, I don't know exactly what they did, but they were able to essentially block this person from being able to list them. So there wasn't really much they could do with them. So they were returned. I believe there's still a few outstanding, and there were a couple wallets that were able to take advantage of this vulnerability in the code before it was patched up. So just, you know, it also did some damage to the token in the immediate term, but that's all rebounded. So another interesting case there in that they were able to kind of block this person from doing anything with the assets. They were able to steal them, but, you know, at this point that Arbitrum marketplace the Arbitrum NFT marketplace is pretty much just magic. So without being able to sell them there's really not much of an avenue to realize the gain. So they ended up returning them. You know, can stay anonymous that way and just walk away, I guess. And well, hopefully for their sake, although, you know, you've got to be worried on that side that, you know, you've got that address out there now and you better not have anything attached to it, because, you know, you've got to know that somebody's going to watch and be watching these types of addresses that have been part of hacks. And, you know, just to get clues, as we really recently saw with one of the biggest hacks from 2016 with the DAO, you know, that coming back, and, you know, that's 6 years in the past. And, you know, that's still around, and these digital traces are not going to go away. So, you know, I think there's a lot of interesting things that are going to happen with how these hacks and vulnerabilities are taken care of in the future, both by the marketplaces and by the actors themselves, because of all of the digital footprints that we are, or digital traces even, that we're just leaving around. And there's going to be more ways to kind of track or to tie these, I'd say, like Web 2 and Web 3 kind of traces together. And, you know, once you have that, that's a lot of information. I've been been thinking about that more and more recently.
Yeah, it's not anonymous. No way is it anonymous. I'm really glad you brought that up about blocked assets. Because going back to Pegasi, I have to tell you, do not buy any Pegasi on OpenSea. I'll say it one more time. If you're getting into this game, don't buy them on OpenSea, because there is a secondary blocked list of Pegas on and owned by the main platform. So you can buy it. There's no flag or warning on the OpenSea site. But then suddenly you go into the game and you'll potentially get this like warning and block, and you won't be able to race. You won't be able to use the asset. And then you'd be like, oh God, I'm like stuck. There's no manner of recourse. There's just a, you should have known better. And that's just, it's a little ridiculous, but it's the nature of the wild west you're playing in. So again, go to the marketplace natively on Pegasi, and frankly, go native to whatever your project on is, to make sure and track that asset is in fact not blocked. There's no problem with it. If it's too good to be true, it is. You know, that generally is true. So you're going to want to make sure you try to do your best on it, and don't assume any platform that you're like shopping on has the full data of that individual asset. All right. I think we've scared the crap out of our audience today.
Yeah, and I hope they...
I think that's the rule.
I hope people didn't jump off right away and start buying their Pegas and are now listening to this.
You got to fumble in. didn't even make it to the end of the episode. I fumbled it, so that'd be so degenerate.
Now listing.
I would respect the shit out of you if you didn't even wait to the end.
Please get in touch with George if you did this. He'll be happy to steer you in the right direction.
I will say at least wait to the end of the episode. That's where we share all the disclaimers and disclosures, such as this is not financial advice. All right, Andrew, thank you so much. Good luck out there. Stay safe.
This has been an episode of the AAA NFT Podcast, all about affordable NFTs. The episode notes and resources may be found at 3ANFT.com in our show notes. Again, 3ANFT.com. And that reminder, don't bet what you can't afford to lose. Remember, we are not financial advisors, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Thanks for joining us. Hope you learned something.